Hello, and welcome to the Voices of Rathdown podcast. This podcast has been set up to give politicians, organisations, and humans in the Rathdown area a platform. This is to engage and empower people in their local community. I'm your host, Caitlin Grant, and I believe in the importance of getting involved in your area. Today, I will be talking to Councillor Mara Stockrell, who is a councillor in the Rathdown area for Fine Gael. Morris has a huge family history in politics in Ireland, Canada, and Germany. We will discuss this background in politics and what's going on in the Rathdown area. Let's get straight into it. Perfect. So thank you so much, Morris, for joining us today.
Very welcome.
Morris, you're Fine Gael councillor, is that correct?
That's correct. I was co-opted to the council last year. What happened was that Barry Ward, who was my predecessor on the council, was elected to the Senate, and there was an internal election, a hard-fought one with three candidates, which I was lucky enough to win.
It's always nice winning an election of any kind, especially.
It is, particularly. I ran in 2014 and missed it relatively narrowly. I won't say narrowly because that's overstating it, but relatively narrowly. So it came as a bit of a surprise that there was an opportunity again, so I went for it.
It's always good to make sure you get back on your feet even after, you know, you lose.
Exactly, yeah.
There's so many different opportunities, and if you just give up after the first one, you know, you're not going to get anywhere, so...
I couldn't run again in 2019 for personal reasons, so it really did come as a surprise, because that was one that I watched and was going, oh, I wish I was part of it, you know? So it was nice to get the opportunity again, but at my advanced age of 53.
And obviously then, before you ran for this position, before the first time, did you get involved in politics at an early stage? Or how what was your initial kind of adjustment to politics in Ireland?
Well, in my case, it's actually quite, goes back really to my childhood, because my grandfather was a TD for Fine Gael in, well, it was Dublin South Central by the time he retired from politics. But he'd originally started off in Dublin South, and his brother and father had been TDs for Dunleary Rathdown. And so it goes back quite a long way in the family. In fact, my great-great-grandmother was one of the first women to be elected to Blackrock UDC in 1898, which was the first time women had the vote and could run. So I think she was the first, one of four women who were elected in Ireland, but I could be open to correction on that. I'm sure somebody knows that better than I do. So... I was unaware of it until somebody pointed out I'm the fifth generation of my family in politics, so that was quite nice. So that's the longest serving in Ireland at the moment, but I think Henry Grattan's family were active for about 10 generations, so we've got a way to go till we catch up to that.
So you've obviously become inspired by your family's history in politics then?
Yes, it was one of those funny things. When I first ran, I'll go back to 2013, when I was first asked to run, it actually happened on the day my daughter was very little at the time, and she was giving out about having to learn history because she said it's only about men, and she was fed up with it, there were no women, and so I borrowed a thesis that had been written about my great-great-grandmother by a lady for her master's thesis in women's studies in UCD, and was reading through it to be able to tell my daughter all about her three greats, great-great-great-grandmother. And at that moment, funnily enough, a phone call came through from somebody in Fine Gael asking, would I be interested in putting my name forward? So I thought, well, that was karma, and I couldn't really turn it down or the opportunity. So I then decided I would get involved. But really, my childhood had been in some ways dominated by politics because of my grandfather. Now, I was born in 1968, but one of my very first memories was seeing him, because he was a council of state as well as a TD, on television at Erskine Childers' funeral. And of course, you know, the funeral didn't particularly interest me, but seeing my granddad on telly did. And my grandfather brought us after he'd retired from politics, to the Dáil restaurant, my sister and I, as a treat one time. And I remember vividly meeting Charles Haughey, and, you know, who came down to say hello to my granddad, and they had a very pleasant chat. Now, he was incredibly charming personally. Apparently, my father said when I came home, I ran to wash my hands, and my father said, "Why?" "Oh, I shook hands with Charles Haughey. I have to wash off the gunpowder." Because that's all I knew about Charles Haughey, was that the famous trial, in which he was acquitted, I have to say. But maybe I'd been brought up with a slightly partisan point of view. But also in my wider family, my mother's German, and her mother had been a socialist all her life, and had been the personal assistant to Willy Brandt, who was the leader of the Social Democratic Party in Germany. And she had worked within the party, Social Democrats in Germany, for quite a long time, and knew all the major players quite well. And she'd been, in fact, very, very fortunate to survive Nazi Germany, because she ran a lifeline smuggling Jews out of Germany before the war, and Allied airmen during the war. So she was quite a brave woman, and she was very, very lucky to survive, because nearly all of her friends were murdered by the Nazis. So I was brought up with that. And also, and this is on my father's half Canadian, so because my paternal grandmother is Canadian, her sister was the PA and secretary to the Canadian Prime Minister, a fellow called Diefenbaker. So I had politics everywhere in my family. The only person in my family who really wasn't particularly interested in politics was my father. He'd served as a councillor, decided it really wasn't for him. He didn't particularly enjoy it. Now, he was quite young when he ran, and maybe he did very well. He headed the poll. He was the top Fine Gael person. And he was quite a handsome young man in those days. And he did very well, but it wasn't for him. So he spent his whole time trying to dissuade me from any active involvement in politics, whereas I think I was probably bitten by the bug when I was watching the famous debates between Charles Haughey and Gary Fitzgerald in around 1981-82. There were a number of elections then, and these debates were pure box office on telly. Everybody was watching them, and you're either cheering for Garrett or you're cheering for Charlie. Obviously, I was cheering for Garrett. And so from that point of view, Irish politics is a little bit tribal in that way, and it's very, very difficult for somebody to move away, or certainly was for my generation, to move away from what you were born into. I did try, but failed. And I did leave Fine Gael at one point and joined the Progressive Democrats, and then came back to Fine Gael. I was forgiven eventually. It took a few years.
You do have politics everywhere in your family. And, you know, saying to your daughter about your great-grandmother, and, you know, even your mother, there's so many different strong women that you're kind of like grown into and can tell stories about. So that's really inspiring to hear. And even though your father didn't want you to get too involved because he wasn't too passionate, you still managed to find your way back into the passion of the people in your history.
Well, yes, I'm deep interest in history. Now, I won't profess to be an expert. My main philosophy at this point is I don't like violence. I don't like extremes of any sort. I'd be very much centrist in my view. I think common sense is incredibly underrated when compared to ideological politics, which I think force people into positions that they mightn't instinctively believe in. Now, obviously, being a member of any political party is a compromise. You don't agree with everything. Certainly, I know my grandfather didn't agree with everything in Fine Gael, but you take it in its totality. And I would like to think I have a sentient brain that's capable of thinking on its own, and that I wouldn't be mere lobby fodder, in the sense that, you know, if there is an issue that I feel very strongly about, I would go against the party view. And on the council, we have a great leeway that way. Unless a whip is imposed, you can vote whichever way you like. And a whip is very, very rarely imposed. I think I voted against the Fine Gael position once, but so did other members in Fine Gael. So it wasn't necessarily a particularly unanimous decision to vote one way or the other. And people just voted with their conscience. But I think it's important to have a conscience in politics, because if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to negotiate with other people. Now, my background professionally is as a lawyer, so I probably believe you can negotiate anything. Maybe I'm a little bit optimistic that way, but I certainly think there's a way to find common ground and to find something that maybe makes everybody equally unhappy, and then you found a solution. So I'm not a great believer in not communicating with the other side. And indeed, I learned from my grandfather that most of his close friends in politics actually were in Fianna Fáil. Now, many in Fine Gael, but actually some of his best friends were in Fianna Fáil. That was probably easy for him because my family was never part of the Civil War. We were a Protestant family, so in some ways we stepped back from that. We would have been, my great-great-grandfather, who was elected for Dunleary Rathdown in 1919, was the last unionist elected in Southern Ireland. Now, he was trying to persuade other unionists to come into United Ireland and failed miserably, you could say. But certainly, I'm a great believer in talking to those who are of an opposing view. And if you disagree, you disagree, and then you vote.
Exactly. And when you're representing so many people in your area, and, you know, even nationally, and then having to talk to different representatives, you know, there's going to be differences of opinion everywhere. You know, everyone's brought up in a different way, in a different place.
I mean, I find, for example, being centrist, I probably would have been, when I was younger, more of a Thatcherite. When I grew up in the 80s, Margaret Thatcher did appear to be an inspiring figure. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, you go, well, a lot of mistakes were made and it was maybe quite inhumane. What you do learn as you get older, and I've certainly found this, is you learn, particularly men, I think, have learn empathy, and we learn a bit of kindness. And I don't think that is a weakness. I think a lot of men are terrified of showing it. And sometimes you have to, you know, in a debate, hit hard, but it's never personal. The second you start personalizing it, I think you're going down a bad track. And that's one of the things I find a little bit, it's the biggest negative in Irish politics at the moment, is the personalisation of some of the politics. Now, that may be only in a social media bubble. The likes of Twitter is one thing. And then you go knock on doors and you find the people actually, whether they're supporting Fine Gael or not, appreciate the fact that you're trying to do something.
Yeah, like walking around and just canvassing and, you know, having conversations and taking time out, going to different community projects and things like that. Just getting involved and showing your face. People just appreciate that so much. Like, oh yeah, that's my representative now, yeah. You know. Getting active.
Yeah, I think the big downside of COVID has been that you can't get out and meet people. So we're having to find slightly more inventive ways. And we're all learning how to use Zoom now. And Teams, I think, are the two main platforms that we use. And, you know, it still isn't ideal because there's nothing quite like a face-to-face chat.
You know, a good handshake, or, you know, when you see someone, you know, they're smiling, then you smile and stuff like that. It's the little things. And at the end of the day, you know, that's what humans are for. We're for talking to people. We're for making connections. And I think, you know, despite the alternatives that have been creative, we've all really missed that face-to-face connection.
Well, I have to say, when I ran in 2014, the part I enjoyed most was actually knocking on doors and chatting to people. Now, I can say 100%, you know, hand on my heart, I got two doors where people were rude in totality.
Yeah, that's nothing. That's nothing.
No. And even then, it wasn't, you know, offensive in the sense of, you know, there were no threats of physical violence or anything. It was more, you know, a little bit use of Anglo-Saxon, what they thought of my party. Again, it wasn't personally directed, so, you know, it was absolutely fine. Most people, I mean, I think it's quite an Irish thing, are polite to your face. And I enjoyed that. And it's funny what you learn, actually, going door to door. You learn far more about how people live. And then there was the house that made me laugh out loud, where they said, well, we're actually voting for people before profit. And I looked at the paintings that were hanging up in the hallway, and they were worth more than my house. So I have to admit, I burst out laughing. He realised, you know, he had two brand new cars in the driveway. The house was probably worth, well, at least $1 million then, probably $2 million now. And he went, well, it's more the wife, really. He had the good grace to feel a little embarrassed, but it wasn't. I just found that quite funny. And that's Irish politics for you. People don't necessarily vote for what they want you to do. They vote on whether they like you.
On a local level, anyway, it's down to who you are and, you know, what you're about instead of really what your party represents. That's what I found. But just wondering now, you've said that you, when you go door to door and you get to meet people, and that's what you really love about elections and being a rep. What other kind of things have you gotten involved with in your community over the last number of years in your political career?
Well, in a wider sense, and it predates politics, I was on the board of the National Parents Council for primary school children, because my children were in primary school, and I served on that for about 3 years, and that again I think reawakened a taste for politics, because you can do something even as a councillor. I mean, officially a councillor's functions are very, very limited, but a councillor can also amplify wider concerns, things like school funding, even little things like, and they're not little to the people who whom they affect. For example, the school where my children went, a child was knocked down by a car outside of it, and we, as the parents, launched a campaign. I happened to be chair of the school board, but it was really one of the mothers who drove it with great passion. I can't claim a responsibility for that. It did affect change. We got onto all the councillors. I wasn't a councillor at the time, but I knew them all because I had run and I'd been defeated, but I knew whom to contact. And it was, and little things like that that you can do in your, for your community. So we got traffic calming measures put in, get cars to slow down outside the school, because it was a tiny little school and only 100 children in it roughly. So people may not have been aware there was actually a school there because it was hidden behind a church. So it's little things like that that you get involved in that lead you on to, well, can I do more? And just as a councillor, one of my main tasks is liaising with residents' associations. They will get on to you with a list of problems they have. So what you do is you facilitate a meeting with the local authority officials and all the councillors. It's not party political. So you get all the councillors for the ward in there. And the problems are then put to the officials in the council. What can they do about it? And there were things like, which might appear to be quite minor, but bin collections. Now, if a bin is blocking a cycleway, let's say for a week, that is a problem. Or the pathway, local business may have nowhere else to put them, so it could be well a matter of scheduling greater bin collection. Now, this sounds all very minor, but actually it has quite an effect on people's lives. Again, putting in lower speed limits into housing estates, then parking issues. And the residents' associations were quite reliant on them to bring to us a lot of things they find that need change in their local community. Again, there are bigger picture things like development plans. For example, there's a new master plan for Black Rock, hopefully in the next week, highlighting this, and people can make submissions to it. Very often people aren't aware of that there are submissions that they can make. The best way really still is via old-fashioned leafleting, because people don't necessarily go searching for, I'll look through the local authority website to find something for my area, necessarily. Most people don't. Some do, obviously, and are very diligent, but most don't, because we've other things to be getting on with our lives. But then if it's brought to their attention, it's a twofold job. One of it's problem solving. Regularly, planning permissions come up that could affect a neighbour. Again, little things like trees encroaching on property. People don't want to go down legal routes, but a neighbour may not wish to chop down the tree. So again, it's a matter sometimes of negotiation. It's another matter of making the local authority aware of it. Or areas that get flooded due to the gullies not being cleaned. This isn't high-grade ideological, philosophical politics. But it does make a big difference to people's daily lives. And different councillors will get different representations from different groups. I tend to get, maybe because of my legal background, I tend to get a lot of the legal type stuff coming across my way, particularly on the planning permissions. And again, the cycle lanes are a big one at the moment. People don't necessarily like it blocked, cycle lane going immediately outside their driveway. They would think access to their house, and they could well be right, but it's a matter of the greater good then has to come into it. What is the objective? Again, a lot of it is a balancing act, and I find usually if you talk to people and they're informed, and I think this is where sometimes local authorities fall down, they don't consult enough with people. in a direct, meaningful way. They say, oh, we put on our website, we have a consultation process, and you're going, yeah, but nobody knew about it. You know, the three people who noticed it, but that could be a little bit low, but you know what I mean. It may not be necessarily representative. Now, I found that the local authority officials are very helpful if you put it to them. Again, they're working in a bit of a bubble sometimes because they're not directly interfacing with their local communities. And they may look at it more, maybe sometimes from an engineering point of view, whereas locals are clearly looking at it from a day-to-day living point of view. And one of the big issues is making cycle lanes safe for young children. And that is not necessarily an easy task because our roads are quite narrow in this country, in some of the areas. So, you know, how much, again, it's a balancing act between getting cars moving. Now, the aim is to get people out of cars, but how feasible that is entirely in a country where it rains every other day in winter. In summer, it's great. Everybody wants to cycle. But in winter, it's a different matter entirely. So, again, it's a balancing act. And what you try to do, you can't please everyone. There's always going to be somebody upset. But you try to do the best thing for the long term. I think you have to engage in a bit of long-term thinking. And that's not always apparent. And, you know, not every decision we make is correct. But I have a view that if you make a decision in good faith, then you can stand over it, even if you're proven to be wrong. At least you know you acted in good faith. And I'm not a great believer in being a mouthpiece for a very vocal minority, because some people are highly articulate, but they may form a very, very small minority. So you do have to take a look at the bigger picture for the greater good.
They do seem like very small on a national level, but on a daily level, on a local level, like that would be a huge inconvenience. So it's very important that we have representatives who are able to sort those things out. And as you say, it is difficult for, you know, the local community and people in general to know who to go to when they want to sort things out. So if you were to tell people, you know, in your area, how would you tell them to reach out and kind of solve these problems?
Well, we have a very good mechanism in the council, which we have local area meetings, which all the local councillors would attend. And what you can do is you can table questions or motions at those meetings, which for specific areas. Council meetings tend to be for the whole totality of Dunleary Rathdown, the area. But the mechanism with the area committee meetings is very, very helpful because it zones in on specific areas. Sometimes the best way to raise an issue for local residents is to go to their councillor, highlight their issue, and we can then either table a question or a motion, usually a question. And then it's really to get behind the thinking of the officials working in the council. And their thinking may be very, very good, or it may be wrong. But it can at least tease that out. And what I find is that in these meetings, you can put the questions in a friendly way. You can be firm. You can say, look, I'm not happy with what you've done, or I don't think it's a good idea. And then they justify it. So you can go back to people and say, well, this is their reasoning. Now, if you disagree, I can suggest next steps for you. But frequently, I found the council officials very helpful. If you raise an issue, look, this has had an effect that was not predicted, they will go back and look at it. Now, sometimes they'll carry out, let's say, a traffic survey to see what the level of traffic is. I know, for example, with the traffic calming for the school, they did a survey how many children were crossing the road. They said, well, it was so few that it wasn't worth putting down the traffic calming. Now, it wasn't when I was on the council, but I remember pointing out, saying, well, this is actually more dangerous if there's very few, because they're not expecting children to be crossing the road. So therefore, it's needed even more. Maybe not very engineering type thinking, but that was maybe emotional parental thinking. If you then reframe things for them, you will get a fair response, in my experience. And there'll be sometimes a light bulb moment, oh, we get it. And certainly in that case, very extensive and very effective traffic calming was put in.
It's great to see that there is that kind of structure put in place if someone has something to, you know, report, like putting in an extra set of traffic lights or something small like that, that will make a huge difference eventually, you know, saving children's lives. Like, that's a huge deal in our local community, for sure.
To me, it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, for everyone, it should be. So it is good to be able to reach out to your counsellor and get more information about, you know, how to proceed with these kind of things and reach out to the local authority. So that's really great to understand. I'm just wondering, since been living in the area for a while and, you know, you've been engaging in these kind of activities, do you know of any way that maybe people of all ages could engage, not really on a political level or maybe a political level, but how can you interact your community more or maybe get a little bit more involved and learn more about what's going on?
Well, obviously there's various ways, and you cited an obvious one, which is get involved in one of the political parties. Now, if you're not really interested in that, and let's face it, I would imagine the majority of people aren't. I mean, political party meetings for the inner circle are fascinating and mind-numbingly boring for anybody outside of it. I remember when I first was active in Fine Gael, I was one of the youngest people there. I felt by about 100 years. I was actually in my early 30s, but I was still, but I was at times treated like a child. And I'm going, look, I'm older than when Michael Collins got shot, for goodness sake. So it can be quite difficult and intimidating for people. So excluding getting involved in a political party, which is not everyone's cup of tea, getting involved with your local residents association is quite a good way of doing it. Now, again, residents associations can be the same people on them for the last number of years, and that can be sometimes difficult for a new person unless they've got quite a forthright personality to break into. But it is a good way. It's always a great way to do it without getting co-opted onto the committee, because in my experience, resident associations, if you turn up, you get co-opted onto the committee, that happened to me, and I was going, oh, how did I get myself into this? If you can say, look, I don't want to be on the committee, but I have a particular skill I can offer. Phone me if there's a problem, or can I email you? But at least getting to know the people involved on your residence committee is very helpful, because they are the ones who will represent themselves as being representative of the community. Now, the other way, it's very simple. You can contact everything. It's on the internet. You can contact the various departments of the local authority, but if you feel you're getting nowhere, then any one of your councillors is a good place to go to. There are other ways. If you're involved in sports, if you're involved in, let's say, the Scouts, if you're involved in charity work, there's always going to be an interlink at some point with the local authority. There are all kinds of grants and schemes, again, that people are frequently unaware of, that you can apply for small amounts of money in the grand scheme, but can make a huge difference maybe to that charity or that sporting club or whatever it is, not confining it to charities or sporting groups. I'll just give an example of what happened in my own neighbourhood. One of the local residents was ex-army, Lieutenant Colonel in the Irish Army, incredibly nice man, but blunt, from Cork. So he had that Cork bluntness about him, which I always enjoy. But he said to me, he wanted to have a little 1916 commemorative stone, because he thought he wanted, you know, a nice little middle class area to have it, as well as it being sort of hijacked by various other political parties. And you know who I'm alluding to. Anyway. And I actually thought, yeah, I mean, why not? Let's get it done. And a grant was obtained for that. There was a grant going. And there's a very nice very discreet little sort of memorial plaque with flowers and shrubbery planted around it. But it did lead to people then, the knock-on effect of that was people going, how else can we beautify the area? What else can be done? And then we discovered there were all sorts of little grants you could get for planting of trees or shrubs, essentially gardening grants for public areas. And then you get into discussions. For example, what I thought was a brilliant idea from one of the residents was that we should have a permanent, for want of a better word, or container with sand for icy conditions, you know, get their shovels out and use that themselves before waiting for a council truck to come around and do it. You might remember the big snows from a few years ago, and that would have been very, very handy to have. Now, it hasn't happened as yet, but it's that kind of, I'm giving an example of that kind of thinking. People get ideas then and it knocks on. But really, if you have ideas, contacting councillors is a very, very good idea. I'll just give you one example. The Fine Gael group had a great meeting the other day, by Zoom, of course. One of the residents in Dunleary, as it happens, had prepared a really, really interesting paper on how to improve Dunleary and how to use the harbour more and the sailing clubs and the facilities. You know, we had a big discussion. Some of it was feasible, some of it not necessarily. You will find people receptive to ideas. So if people are prepared to do that, I think we should always listen to that. And I think people are engaging during the lockdown. They have a bit more time to have ideas. That's another way you can engage. You never know who can help you.
There's so many different like opportunities we have around us. Like just if we take a walk outside in our 5 kilometers and we're walking around, you spot a new tree or some new like flowers that have just grown or something, like, you know, the daffodils when they've grown up now, and it just makes such a nice difference, you know, like just the color yellow just around the area for March and April. It makes the community that little bit more, you know, happy and positive and stuff like that. So it just shows you that these little things that we can reach out and get grants for, you know, they make a big difference. And then they get the ball rolling with other ideas. They get more people involved and people start talking. And then, you know, the community comes together. So they seem small, but they're actually quite big for our area.
Well, I'm a peculiar mixture, you see. I have a split personality politically. On one half, I'm a social democrat. On the other half, I'm, you know, sort of Fine Gael. And then, you know, my Canadian bit, I'm the Canadian Conservative Party. So I have this mishmash of influences going back to my childhood. So I don't like absolutist positions, but what I do like, and you alluded to Daffodil Day, I do like colour. Too much of what we do is monochrome. Now, I've purposely decided as a councillor I'm not wearing a suit because I think a suit can put up barriers. I made a conscious decision during last lockdown. It was so the first lockdown, when I say this time last year, it was so depressing. And we were all in quite a lot of fear at the time because we didn't really know anything about this virus. And we didn't know whether it would kill us. And I remember sitting at home. I looked at all my casual clothes and they were so boring. They were beige chinos and glorified work shirts and drab. Everything was drab. So I went out and bought myself this bright jumper, for example. Even if you bring small amounts of colour into your life and by extension into local communities, I think it helps a lot. There's one initiative actually that I'll blow the trumpet for Dunleary on, an arts section of Dunleary Rathdown County Council. They have some quite ambitious plans as to street art, special designated areas to commission particular graffiti artists maybe, and other artists, and several. We were shown about 15 sites where walls could be used to put in quite innovative art or sculpture or whatnot. Now, I think that things like that do brighten a place up, and I think people feel better for it. There'll always be people who say, oh no, you know, that doesn't look right there. Well, let's see what it looks like, because I remember Dunleary Library, half the world was against it when I was running in 2014, and now everybody loves it.
I think looking outside now, I'd say there's loads of boring, grey, tired walls that if they were painted with this street art, they would just make such a difference. You know, when you're walking in your 5K and you walk past the wall, you can really admire any bold colours or any new designs, and you can start talking about the walls, you know, you have something to talk about. And then of course it gives opportunities to local artists. So you really hit two yeah. birds with the same stone there.
And the other nice thing is, I think it helps local businesses as well, because, you know, after COVID is over, hopefully it'll be over one day, we'll be back into shops, and hopefully back into shops. Now, I don't think it'll ever be the same again, because we've got incredibly used to online shopping. But there are certain things you can't buy online. I think if you make an environment nice to be in, people will walk in it. And then, you know, you might pass a shop that's selling potted plants, you know, that are nice and bright, and you might make a spontaneous purchase. Once you get people out and about, that's half the battle. Making our areas feel happy, safe places to be, I think is very, very important. The mental health of the nation has taken a huge hit. I've three dogs, and they've kept me relatively sane. Not totally, but relatively. I frequently get into conversations when I'm walking the dogs with people, and I find elderly people are particularly desperate to talk. So I think I had a chat with a guy for about an hour who's pruning his roses, and I just said, oh, getting in just on time, or some slightly flippant comment, and that turned into a conversation. And I think if we're all cooped up in our rooms doing Zoom, we don't get that opportunity to interact. So there's one great thing about Ireland is we're an incredibly chatty nation. Random strangers in Ireland will get chatting in pubs, they'll get chatting at bus stops, they'll get chatting anywhere, frankly. I think we'll bounce back quicker because we're a naturally gregarious nation, and I think people will get talking. In the last, when we were let out, I think, to forage in the last summer, you know, between the various lockdowns, I found people incredibly friendly and really wanting to talk. So I think we'll get that back, hopefully anyway.
From my own experience, like I used to be kind of a shy person. You know, when you're younger, you keep to yourself, yeah. You know, you talk to your friends and your family, and then you go out and you don't really reach out to strangers now, because, you know, stranger danger has a part of that. But also now that you're walking outside, just going for walks, and, you know, I really want to make sure I give that person a wave, that I pass by, or a smile, you know. And I used to work in a shop, and everyone who came up to the counter, I'd make sure I'd had a really nice conversation. Yeah. And obviously some days, you know, you're wrecked. It was an opportunity to, you know, talk to people and learn about how they're getting up to. So I'm sure that we can find a way to bounce back, as you say, and continue our culture of talk.
I do quite like when politicians or people like myself say, yeah, look, I had difficulties during this lockdown. I had to go to the doctor for an antidepressant, or, you know, something to calm me down, or I just didn't feel right and I knew I needed a bit of help. Now, I have friends who work in the medical area, and they're telling me that it's incredible how many people are coming with relatively minor mental health difficulties. But a lot of it is through isolation, and a lot of it sheer loneliness and lack of interaction. So I think, you know, I certainly wouldn't be shy or ashamed of saying, yeah, I live on my own, and I found it really, really hard at times. You know, you were wondering, why am I even getting up? And I think people do appreciate that honesty, because it reflects what they're going through. And I think particular men are dreadful at sharing. I think women are far better at talking to their friends about their problems. So I think particularly if male counsellors or male politicians come out and say, I had a rotten time, because we're not all perfect. We're not all paragons of virtue on every level. We all have our flaws. And I think if you're pretty straight and say, no, I had a rotten, difficult time, people will respect that. See, we're uniquely placed. People will tell us things that they won't tell anyone else. So sometimes somebody relatively anonymous like me is a useful person to turn to. Now, I'm not skilled in any way in dealing with domestic abuse of any sort, but you can listen, and you can certainly give them direction where to go and do a bit of research as the right person to speak to. Because there are things, this lockdown has brought down a focus, or has brought a focus on things going on behind closed doors in this country. And again, you know, as a parent, I feel very strongly about these kind of issues. And so I think those are wider roles we can play, over and above the classic, you know, statutory functions. And I think a lot of councillors do. I'll give you one example just from my family history. My grandfather's brother was a fellow called Percy Dockrell. Now, being a Protestant TD, he was in a slightly different position. And a distraught young woman came to him and said that her child had been taken away by the Catholic Church, essentially. And she couldn't go to any of the other TDs because they were all daily communicants. But she knew he was outside of all that. What could he do? Now, this is in the 1950s. And I know my grandfather did similar things because we found bits of correspondence. He burnt most of it, actually, funnily enough. But in any event, he got the child back, which in those days, and he was on the cusp of being adopted. And the reason I know about that story, actually, is that I was quite young at the time. I was in a restaurant in Dublin, Elephant and Castle, actually, having chicken wings. And I handed him the, you know, bit of plastic to pay. And it was probably my first credit card. And a young guy serving looked at it. And then anyway, he said, "Oh, well, Dockrell, are you related to?" And I said, "I am." And he came back and said, "No charge, your family helped mine."
That's amazing.
And I then said, "How?" And he said, "Well, you prevented an adoption happening." Now, he may well have been that child. I don't know. But
the fact that he's still thanking you to this day, you know, just shows how much of a big deal one act of kindness can do, you know?
Yeah, and I actually think kindness is very much underrated. And again, that I'm not saying it's our overriding function to go out, you know, sort of hugging people or anything like that. But small acts of kindness can go a really long way. Even just listening to somebody can help them. And then there's another day when you might need their help.
Kindness does go that extra mile, you know, especially in the last year with everything that's happened. It just shows one conversation can just change your entire day if you've been isolated. As you say, like living alone, if you don't have any dogs, you know, to take care of you and stuff like that. It can feel absolutely awful. So to go out and just have that one conversation with a nice person, you know, that just changes. That changes your entire perspective on that day, and then it prepares you for the next day.
It does. A lot of the friends might have passed away, their family aren't living near, so they actually rely on the daily trip to the local shop for sheer sanity. Also, the children. My son is 12, and his highlight of his week is when he meets up with one of his friends in Dunleary, and he totally looks forward to that. The two of them just walk around the place chatting, you know, so I do feel very, very sorry for the kids on that, as well as the parents who are driven mad.
Yeah, it's funny to think that, you know, looking forward to that 1 hour a week when last year the kids would be playing on the streets for hours, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for taking this time out to talk to me about what's going on in the area and how people can get involved. And I feel like I know you a bit better.
Well, I hope we can meet in person one day. But look, if you have any follow-up questions or want to interrogate me on anything, I'm more than happy to oblige. It's been very enjoyable chatting to you. And the only thing I'll say is to people, look, if you do have a problem, don't be shy about emailing us, any counsellor, not just myself, you know, but also to look at your local authority website. You might find the answer there, even though they can be a little bit difficult to navigate at times. I do appreciate that. But in any event, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Maurice. Take care now. Have a lovely evening. Thank you for listening to our podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're living in the Rathdown area and you would like to get involved, please feel free to reach out to me and you could be on one of our episodes. So that's it for today. Take care, and I'll see you in the next podcast.